Call the meeting of the town of Discovery Bay to order. If you please stand and join Director Graves in the pledge of allegiance.
All right, pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Roll call?
Roll call has been taken and let the record reflect all members are present.
Thank you. Public comments. I have one card, Terry Mahaney. Terry?
Terry Mahaney, I live on Discovery Bay Boulevard, and I missed a few meetings. I've been out of town with my grandson with his hockey and stuff, so I'm back. Anyhow, my issue is the speed on Discovery Bay Boulevard. I can't attest to any of the other streets, but I know they're all said there's a few others that are really fast. I would like to see a little more of CAP and sheriffs on Discovery Bay Boulevard. I live in the first block of it here, and it's just, there's just not much going on, and it's still the same thing as it was a year ago, and 2 years ago, and 5 years ago, so it just, it's not getting any better. And another thing, I've been looking at the report that comes out with the minutes and stuff, and I don't see any breakdown of the citations or stops or anything that had been issued by the CHP or the sheriff as far as the numbers go. They may have had 10 stops, but what came of that? So maybe if we can get it in their report that goes online, so Joe Blow like me can look at it and see what they're actually doing, I would appreciate that.
We discussed that in the last couple of meetings, and they're working on how to digitize that.
Oh, okay. Report.
So
okay. Yeah.
Be patient with this, but we'll
work. I am. I'm
I
trying to be patient. It's not working real well, but anyhow. Thank you guys very much. Appreciate your time.
Any other public comment? Okay, we'll close public comment and move to area reports. Supervisor Burgess, office.
Just right here.
Hi, good evening. I'm Alicia Knuckles with Supervisor Burgess's office, and I just have a couple of announcements for you. First one, there's some flyers out there on the back for any of you that like or want to learn how to compost. The county will be doing a pre-composting workshop at the Community Presbyterian Church on Saturday, November 18th from 10 to 12. And on the flyers back there, it'll tell you how you can go and sign up online if you're interested in doing that. The other announcement is the Discovery Bay P6, so the sheriff's meeting, is next Wednesday, the 11th, Wednesday the 11th at 6 p.m. And we just meet right around the corner in this back room over there. That's all I have for my office tonight. However, I do have a county staff member here tonight to provide you an update on the urban farm ordinance, and his name is Stan Muraoka, and he is with the Department of Conservation and Development. Stan?
Good evening, board members. I'm Stan Muraoka with the Department of Conservation and Development. And I'm here because I've been working for about 2 years now at the direction of the board on what's called urban farm animal ordinance. And so I've basically gone around to various communities within the county presenting, and so I'm here before you this evening. We're at a stage where we have a draft urban farm animal ordinance. And it's something that we've worked with the Office of the County Council and with the Animal Services Department. And so we're currently trying to figure out a schedule to go first to the County Planning Commission and then to the board. There's an informational piece that I brought with me. It's on the back table that has more detailed information about the ordinance. But essentially, what the board has asked us to do is to see how to regulate or how to allow certain urban farm animals on smaller residential property. Currently, if you have property in the R20 zone and larger, which is a half acre and larger, then you can have smaller animals such as chickens. have been looking to allow chickens at a rate of one chicken or one hen per 1,000 square feet on any residential lot, and also honeybees at a rate of one beehive per 5,000 square feet on any residential lot. And so that potentially affects property here in Discovery Bay. Most of the county is zone R, which is one of the residential districts. In Discovery Bay, your property is primarily P1 because you're a planned development. But if you have single-family residential property here within Discovery Bay, then potentially this ordinance would affect you. You would be able to, as a matter of right, keep chickens, and this would be hens, at a rate of one per 1,000 square feet, depending on the size of your property. And if you have 5,000 square feet, you could keep one honeybee. And the ordinance has regulations in terms of setbacks from property lines in your neighbors if you were to do so. But what we're looking to do is to allow this as a matter of right. And so that very briefly is a synopsis of what's being proposed in this ordinance. Again, it's countywide. And so there are other counties within the county that are really pushing the supervisors to get this type of legislation passed.
Yeah, I have a question. So goats can't have a goat in there.
You can have a goat. Currently, you have to have the R20 half-acre size property or larger, and within that, you have to have 40,000 square feet, which is just under an acre. That would be allowed, but you would have to have that size property.
Right. Well, that's fine. My biggest concern with what you're proposing would be on residential lots here, where every house, theoretically, could have a beehive stored by a chicken.
And it depends on the size of the lot.
Well, they're all sort of the same size.
They're all about the same size.
This is just news to me to bring it in. I didn't have a chance to read it all. I'm not too warm about that.
Okay.
Dogs and cats, I bet you're
trying. Right. And there's information here in terms of how far away from the property lines that chicken coops and beehives have to be. And so there's more detailed information. The other thing about beehives is that they have to be at least 15 feet away from the property line, and even then they have to have what's called a flyway barrier. And so this is something that a lot of cities, not only in the county, but elsewhere, have passed or laws where if you are going to have beehives where lots are smaller and closer together, that you have to put a 6-foot barrier around the hive. And what that does is it forces the honeybees to fly at a height of at least 6 feet in order to get in and out of the hive. And so there are some restrictions or regulations on people who want to keep these things.
Do honeybees stay people?
Generally, no, but they can.
Well, there's, I can just see a swarm attacking a small hive.
The other thing about honeybees is that they're regulated by the State Food and Drug Administration, so anyone who owns a hive has to register it with the state.
Right. We all know that some kind of folks don't obey all the laws. Who's going to raise it? How are you going to know if you've got a honeybee in the backyard? I don't want to get on this bad place too much. Same thing with chickens. If they're not cleaning up their chickens, then you have odors and you can have diseases from the droppings. I just, from an urban setting like we have here, I just can't get on board with something. Thanks,
Just a brief comment on that. We have a number of uses that are permitted as a matter of right. What this ordinance would propose is that someone could keep chickens or honeybees as a matter of right. But even then, our department is complaint driven. So if somebody calls us with a complaint, such as what you mentioned, then our code enforcement officers will look into it. And if it's something that's related to odors, then we would involve the environmental health services. How how we came to start to work on this is we, over the years, have received complaints from neighbors that the chickens are noisy or they smell. And when they come to us, it becomes a zoning issue. Because currently, if you're on, say, a 6,000 square foot lot, then you're not allowed to have any chickens. And so we have been forced to law. And we basically tell the person that they have to get rid of their chickens. And so this came out of that, where people had wanted to keep chickens on smaller lots, and we were directed to look at this issue countywide. I do want to say one thing, and that's what we're proposing is on all single family lots, but you are in the planned district, a P1. And so within a P1, you can amend your current development plan to restrict certain uses that would otherwise be permitted. And so if the town of Discovery Bay felt strongly that this is something that you don't want to allow on your single family properties, then you can come to our department and apply for an amendment of that P1. And we would process it the way we would, any other P1 request.
So, just to understand that right now, we've got residential districts that are allowed to have these urban farm animals.
It's the larger residential district.
What if they already grandfathered in, unless they stop? If they've always had, for the last 100 years, have animals on their properties, and then they stop for a period of time, do they lose that right already?
No.
They never would, right?
And they never would. Okay, I mean, then, currently, if your property is zoned R20 or R40 or any of the larger, you have the right now to have chickens. No one in our district has the right now to have any. So that would be a change. Right now, if you're on agricultural property, it's farming, so you have no restrictions whatsoever. In residential, you can keep chickens. By the way, by chickens, we're talking about cats. We wouldn't allow roosters. So you don't get up at 4 in the morning when they start to grow.
On these districts, R6, does that mean 6 homes per acre?
It's a minimum lot size of 6,000 square feet.
6,000.
So that's how the chart works, is essentially it's 6,000, and then the next district is 7,000.
So if you have a property less than 6,000 feet, you're not allowed to have
it. Well, it would be a substandard lot, but if you're in the district, you would be allowed to have these animals, but at a rate. So it's one per 1,000. So say you had a lot that happened to be 5,000 square feet, you wouldn't be able to have 6, you'd have 5. But there are also regulations in the existing county code for noise, and that's enforced by Animal Services Department, and that would continue. There are regulations about odors, and that's enforced by the Health Department. And so those things are always there.
So Stan, this is a revision to the previous ordinance, if I read this right. What was the driving force, if you know, for
the driving force for this were, there were a number of people in different communities in the county who wanted to be allowed to keep chickens on lots smaller than a half acre.
And they process on the site?
Right.
And they process the animals on the site?
No, this is just to raise and keep chickens and for eggs.
If I'm understanding this right, that under the current county code, you are not allowed to have chickens on residential property.
You're allowed to if you have property that's zoned R20 or larger. That's the current one. You can't have chickens on the smaller lots, R6 or R15. And you can't have it in a P1 district.
So you can't have chickens. And that's pretty much most of the Discovery Bay. So if this ordinance were to pass, it would change. Rules and we know how many properties in Discovery Bay would be affected by this proposed rule.
I have to find out, but I would say almost all. There are some properties way up in the marina area that are zone F1, which is water recreational, and this wouldn't affect those properties.
Right.
So it's primarily the properties that can be accessed from Scarborough Bay Boulevard.
Can I interject for a second, too?
Yes.
This did come before you guys, what, 2 years ago, Stan, or three?
Two.
2 years ago or 3 years ago, and the board at the time did not want this to occur, so you guys wrote a letter stating that. So we have that on file, but we have to go through this process again when we are going to change an ordinance. So you're more than welcome to format a similar letter so that we have that on file as well.
Right. And at the bottom of this, it has my contact information, so there's my phone number and email. And you know, you can send me an email or call me, or you know, call the supervisor's office, or write to the supervisor's office, and we'll have all of this on file.
Great, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it. I just have a question for him. Is that 6,000 square foot less the square footage of your house?
That is
I can't low. Have any chickens in my house. So I have a 3,000 square foot. Actually, I have one.
Right, it's the size of your lot.
Okay, open lot.
Well, the whole lot, including regular houses.
Yeah, but I can't have chickens run around my house. I mean,
come on, for a people for a lawn.
It's the whole lot. You can figure it out from there.
So the chickens would be within the yard, but you know, it would be outside of the setbacks. And so your current setbacks are still there, and they won't be able to have a chicken coop that is right up against their fence.
Thank you, Stan. Okay, let's go back to consent calendar. Do you have a motion?
Move approval.
Is there a second?
Second.
Been moved and seconded. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Unanimous. No liaison reports, presentations. District water engineer.
We're waiting for our district water engineer.
I'm sorry, is he doing any agency reports first? Or is he
not? We don't have it.
I'm sorry. I have our wonderful sheriff back there. Go back over, please. I know you have other and better things to do.
We have Alicia here, too.
She gave hers.
That was a report? Okay.
No, I did get up and speak. You didn't.
You did. I did. But I didn't know if you were going to say, you're right. I'm sorry.
Kevin.
My bad.
Lieutenant Steve Worley, I'm the Delta Station Area Commander for the Sheriff's Office. Last month, we had 192 calls for service within Discovery Bay. Parking calls were 33. Self-initiated activity was 106. That includes our public area checks, so we're not in shopping centers and such. We had a total of 5 traffic stops with resulting in 1 citation. 12 parking citations, and just within our resident deputies here in Discovery Bay, 16 crime reports were written just with them. These stats do not include, will in the future, do not include the day shift, the swing shift, and graveyard B32 car, which is Discovery Bay. I'll try to get those numbers for you. Be a little bit more realistic as far. But what I'm looking at right now is just the two resident deputies. Those calls for service that we had, 8 resulted in what we refer to as a suspicious circumstance, something that doesn't really fall within the realms of the law being broken, but it rises to a level of suspicion, document for future reference in case something has happened. We had 3 warrant arrests, 1 battery, 5 vehicles were burglarized, 1 boat was burglarized, and 1 commercial burglary, which was the Bank of America, I have already heard of that one. And only 5 and thefts, which is actually pretty good for the resolution. Any questions about the numbers I have? I'd like to remind the board that Deputy Ballard is your new resident deputy. She replaces Matt Ingersoll, and she is now radar and LIDAR certified. So we now have replaced the void that was brought about by last meeting by saying Deputy Ingersoll is not here and who's going to be the next certified. So both the resident deputies here are certified in the radar and LIDAR. And on Friday morning at 8:30, we have a coffee with the cop event over at Callahan's coffee shop right across the street. Anything else for the sheriff's office? Any questions?
Board members?
I'm good.
Okay.
I don't remember your
name. No, I'm good.
Quickly.
Didn't fill out, but quickly. Real quickly, I live and association right behind the shopping center. That's kind of a big joke back there behind it, because you're using this quite well, because of the ice cream parlor and the pizza parlor. I made several calls to damage to a property, and no reports are being filed. Last time the kids actually broke into the fence, and were on top of a vacant unit's roof when I caught them. And I asked for a police officer to come and contact me. And I'm standing behind there, and one drives up like halfway, and the kids run around the dumpster. Here I am, I'm waiting only like 50 yards away. And he just leaves, and the kids come back and start asking. And that's the way. I called in several times. There's no reports being made on this. I talked to an officer on the fence next day, and he says, well, I was the one, and I didn't see the kids. And they were just hiding in front of you from the dumpster gun. Yeah. Anyhow, that's one of the reasons I'm coming down, starting this, because of that area. And I don't want to see the kids continue to get worse and worse.
Thank you. I'll understand.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Okay, moving on to presentations.
Justin, you're on board.
Project. 2 months ago, I provided an update to this project. That was August 2nd, and at that time, we had completed the first pass through all the phases 1 through 7, and we provided an update at that point in time. Since then, we've been working on the second pass through phases 1 through 7 to address the installations that were skipped the first time around, which were the concrete installations and the installations that posed difficulties. So, this update, I prepared this presentation, just took the one from last time and put the new figures in there so we can go through the numbers here at this meeting. This map represents the completion status of homes as of September 22nd. And what you'll see here is that most of them are green. Green, the coloration indicates that it's a complete installation. And if there's colors that are pink or blue, that indicates that it was skipped, and that was the status as of September 22nd. And then there's other coloration to show if it were a multi-meter property, meaning it's a house or a property that has more than one meter, more than one service, so therefore more than one meter associated with it. And then there's colors showing some properties that are vacant, which means there's no service on that property, so no meter was installed. So keeping track of all the information, and this map just shows kind of a snapshot of that information, if you will. So at a glance, for the entire project, I've got some information here. The project started in February. We're at this point, we're 93% complete for the entire project. We installed 3,267 water meters as of September 22nd. There's been approximately 120 working days, and that's not accounting for the substantial amount of rain delays that we had earlier this year and infrastructure work that's been taking place throughout the project as well. So that's 120 working days dedicated to meter installations that occurred. First pass around, phases 1 through 7, we completed that on August 2nd, and the average installation rate was 40 sites per day. The second pass around, where we're doing this, sites that we skipped the first time, it's currently ongoing, and it's a slower rate. It's at, we're averaging, I would say, about 10 installations per day, and that's reflective of the fact that mainly because we're doing concrete, and the concrete is kind of an iterative process. They'll do groups of them, and then they'll do concrete pour, so it's not just, they don't actually finish the entire installation in a single day. So as of now, there are 232 remaining sites, or as of, I'm sorry, September 22nd. We're projecting that phase seven, meaning task two of phase seven, which is the final phase of work, is going to start in the next couple of weeks, and we're projecting final completion for the project in 4 to 6 weeks. In terms of just a recap on the meter types, as of September 22nd, meter type ones, which are the ones that were drop-in ready, there's been 303 of those. Those are the sites that didn't require any sort of plumbing. The type twos, which were the ones that required replumbing, but they were located in softscape, so 2,558 of those. And the type threes, which were replumbing but in hardscape, such as concrete, there's been 351 of those complete. As I mentioned, 232 skipped installations remaining. 165 of those would be the type threes, which are the concrete work, and 67 of those would be sites that were skipped initially because they were deemed to have been difficult. And that could have, that a lot of those could have just been primarily in this phase of work. A lot of what those 67 difficults are is that they were a type two, but they were on a connected manifold with a type three, and they didn't want to get into the type two work the first time around because if there were an issue with the manifold or the valve and they had to replace it, then they would be in the business of also doing the type three work at that time, and they had already planned to do the concrete at the end of the project. So they would have skipped it and saved that one until they were coming back around to do the type three work. So a majority of what we're calling difficult, it was just a category, but not necessarily a difficult installation. It could be standard and just as straightforward as all the other type twos. But some of them, there were various reasons where there were obstructions, such as a tree or a bush or a mailbox, to where they said, we can't fit this in our normal mode of operation, so we're going to come back around and hopefully come up with another strategy and replace it. We'll have to remove the obstruction. So back to the recap, the 232 skipped installations, 59 of those are going to be poured back by the end of this week. In terms of costs, the bid amount for the project was $1,391,490. The number's right there. So to date, the billing totals, and this is billing totals as of the ninth pay request, which is takes us up current to September 20th, I believe. There was $1,227,633 of billed contract work and $73,126 of change order work, which were obstructions on the property that were beyond the scope, and those would be resident costs. And there was 460 properties that had unique issues that are associated with that lump sum number. And again, the examples of some of those would have been if there was a mailbox or a fence that had to be removed because it was right next to, or concrete from that mailbox or fence that was encumbering the work for the meter type installation. If there was a bush or a tree that was in the way that had to be taken out, excessive roots from a nearby tree, or conflicts of custom irrigation or service piping. Those are examples. In terms of, throughout this work, there has been infrastructure work, and when we're talking about infrastructure work, we're talking about facilities that are owned by the district, and that is, the demarcation is at the point of the angle meter stop. The district owns the angle meter stop, and that would be the shutoff, so terminology here. So there's a shutoff valve for every single service. The district owns that shutoff valve, and everything upstream from that, so from the shutoff valve toward the main line, is district property. So we call those angle meter stops. They could also be called curb stops, but it's essentially the shutoff valve. And then there's also homes that have manifolds, as I indicated, where there's a single service coming off of the main line and it splits off in a manifold to feed two homes, and the boxes are side by side, and each of those have angle meter stops on them. So in many cases, these valves, they age, just like all other infrastructure, and when we show up to do the work, we cannot isolate the service line because the valve has failed. So if we can't isolate it, then the valve needs to be replaced. And the only, or it's leaking. There's different types of failure. It could be it's leaking, it's frozen, you can't operate it, or if you do, you basically break it. Or when they go to, it could be that maybe they were able to shut it off, and it couldn't be connected because of the pipe itself was old and corroded, and it wasn't possible to connect the new piping to that assembly. In most cases, it has to be replaced, and that entails shutting off the main line, depressurizing the water, and flushing the line. There's, you know, water that fills into the hole that needs to be pumped out. It's a little bit more of an involved process than just installing a meter, but it's necessary. And there's been 438 of those properties that have failed manifolds or angle meter stops, so that's 13% of the total installations to date. And again, those are necessary repairs. The costs have been managed separately from the meter project and paid through the infrastructure reserve fund. To date, the costs for the infrastructure upgrades have been $594,131. And those are brand new installations at the start of their service life at this point. And the district's going to have an accurate database and GIS records for every one of those installations, so they'll have a better understanding of the age of infrastructure that currently exists. So the next stage of work is to complete the 232 skid properties. And as I indicated, this is how many there are, 165 freeze. 67 of these difficult, and not all of them are necessarily difficult. They're just on a manifold with a tight leak. 59 of those are going to be completed this week, and we're actively working with homeowners for any sort of coordination that needs to take place on this particular site. If there are obstructions or issues that need to be addressed, we're projecting phase 6 to be completed in the next 2 weeks. And from that point, go on to phase 7. So we're projecting a completion in November, weather permitting. Haven't seen rain in the forecast, so fingers crossed. Again, the map, just to see it again after hearing that update, maybe gives another view of just kind of where we've been at, where we are at. The majority of the phase 6 is done, going to be finished pretty much this week, and then moving on to the phase 7, pinks and blues there. That's what I got for you. Thank you.
Any questions?
You're probably not the one to answer this question, but I need to ask it, so whoever's in the room that can hear it and provide some information, I'd appreciate it. I'm getting questions from some of the constituents who have meter boxes next to their neighbors, and some meters have a hole in them and some have a cap on them, and I'm wondering why we're creating a situation where people think that if there's a hole there, their meter's not sending a signal, or it's blocking a signal, and why would we be doing something that's causing confusion rather than just completing the job as we go through? If you have an answer.
I don't actually have an answer.
Okay.
If there's a hole in the box, hole in the lid is, a hole in the lid, meaning where the receiver should be, right. Now, in the beginning of the project, I know that we weren't getting the lids that had the receptacle for that, but there shouldn't be a hole. Those were installed inside the box where we didn't have the lids that had that hole pre-drilled. Not aware of why there would be a hole in the lid and the receiver's not being installed. So, I don't know, Virgil, if you have any insight on that?
I'm just aware that the receiver had not been installed yet.
Okay. Well, I know that the district is activating those meters, so perhaps can I get back to you on that?
You sure can, Jeff. Maybe I shouldn't have presented this question. What I can tell you is I made an observation, and it's pointed out to me by several constituents that they're confused as to why they have a lid with a hole in it and their neighbor has a lid with some sort of a cap in it, and it's causing some questions that I can't answer.
People are going to be back doing work on their property again, or whether it's
and how does and have we kept track of each one of those so we know? Okay.
Yeah, well, the district's kept track of every meter that's been activated, and if it doesn't have the, it doesn't have the receiver on top.
But my understanding is it still can work with or without that cap on that hole.
It's still metering water, but it...
Not necessarily.
Virtual goodness.
Not necessarily. Now, one or two things could happen is the neighbor that does have the cap could have either a 1-inch or a 3/4-inch meter, and the one next to it does is the opposite. Generally, the 1-inch does not have the cap on them yet, all of them. So we went through and pre-plumbed them, put the lid in with the hole, and because it required a 1-inch meter, our staff is going through installing the meter, then come back and put the endpoint that transmits the usage out. Now, if you had a meter just installed recently, we are not getting the usage yet, not until the end of the year, when we put it into our billing system called Cassell.
I get that, but in our complex, the lines are all the same, and you can have a box here?
Not necessarily. Not all of them are the same. Prior to us doing the meters, when we went in there and we changed the manifold, we made them generally 1-inch. Some of yours are 3/4-inch, and to save cost, we left them at 3/4-inch. So there is a mix.
And I'll just add that I have had people ask me the same question, so thanks for asking.
It's confused. I still don't even understand the answer, but
it's generally because it's one or two sizes.
Okay.
And we can provide a clear answer to staff and
let's just get the project completed. That's all.
Okay.
I'm more confused now than before I asked the question. Not your fault, my fault. Okay, that's all I have. That was my only real question.
Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you for the presentation.
Thanks. We go to item G, capacity fee charge report, General Manager.
Yes, the annual capacity fee charge report for fiscal year 16-17 is before you for approval. The capacity fee report represents how much in fees we collected from new homes being built during fiscal year 16-17. For each new home requiring water and sewer, we receive a three-part fee consisting of, one, an administration connection inspection charge, two, a water capacity fee charge, and three, a wastewater capacity fee. The chart attached to your staff report shows the fees received in each category. The total of all capacity fees collected last year came...
Go ahead.
Okay. The total fees collected last year came to $585,721. I'm Dina for the day, and we'll try to answer any questions you may have.
Off the top of your heads, because I forget, and I apologize for this. What's your total CIP budget? Approximately.
I don't have it off the top of my head.
CIP? So,
yeah, capital improvement project.
We haven't budgeted out on a variety of things.
Shall we say it's tens of millions of dollars?
Yes. And these actually go into the capital budget fund, except for the administrative costs go into a separate fund.
So the $500,000 of that will go into the project fund and fund the projects that we've approved in the budget that are not yet funded.
That's exactly right.
Any other questions from the board? Mr. Helfer.
In the staff report, it says that you would also be telling us how much money was in the fund, not just how much you put into it, but what the total fund balance was. I don't see that.
Well, I can tell you the total fund balance on collecting fees that we have so far is $3,157,773.22.
Have some of those funds already been expended on capital improvement projects?
No, but they will be. Those can only be directed towards capital improvement projects.
So the projects that are coming up, and that's where those funds will be spent.
Correct.
The operating and capital improvement budget is 17.
Okay, I've just been advised by council it's 17 million for our CIP.
Operating and capital.
All right. operating a capital.
I'm trying to pull up the two if you want to do the split. Do you want to know the split?
11.8.
Yeah, so
11.8.
Minus 6.
Minus 6, yeah.
So the 500 will go for the capital improvement portion of that amount.
Yeah, it goes in a kind of a separate fund to be used, to accumulate and to be used to be spent on those projects.
Great. Thank you. Okay. All right, moving on. The manager's reports, the information items. On the capacity fee report, is there any action to be taken or is it just for information?
If you could just, it has to be brought to you within 180 days of the end of the fiscal year. So we just need an action to approve the report.
Move approval.
Second.
Let's move to second. Any other discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Unanimous. Okay, moving on to director's reports and the committees.
You don't have anything on manager report?
Under general manager reports.
Okay.
The Parks and Landscape Committee had a meeting at the front entrance, and we're looking into trying to get a professional firm to help us do a minimized upgrade, if you will. Take care of the stucco issues, get some recommendations on the cutter lighting, maybe install some fewer plants, more plants that would be drought resistant and a little less maintenance. So we're working through that, and we hope to have something to bring back to the board maybe after our next meeting.
And we had a water wastewater committee meeting, I believe, since the last.
Probably did. Yeah. You can report on that.
Hey, let me go ahead with you guys. I got this one, Bill. Although I'm not too sharp tonight, but I'll give it a shot. The Water Wastewater Committee meeting did have a meeting at Plant 2 where we were given a good report from Veolia about how everything stood, and then we also got a visual walkthrough of the new UV line that was put in. So we have both our UV lines are matching. They're the same product. It's going to help with maintenance and upgrades. And then we also had an opportunity to take, along with staff, take a tour of the new filtration plant, of what you could see of it. The new filtration plant, we learned about the flow of the water, how it was going to work. It was actually working at that point. It had already been turned on. Correct, Bernie?
Correct.
And so it was very interesting in seeing some of the history and how it went together. I think it'd be great for the whole board at some point to check it out. They might want to wait a while. Are those grills in yet?
Yeah.
Okay, there's some areas you can't really see too well because we're waiting. The storms in Florida caused a delay in the grills that go on so you can walk on and see through, so there's just plywood there now. But it was very interesting to the committee, and I think that it'll be interesting to find out where we can go with our Title 22 water.
Thank you.
Did I miss anything, Bill?
No, you covered it very well.
Thank you very much.
I would highly recommend that the at appropriate time, 4 to 6 months when the grills get in,
yeah,
manufactured, that the board have an opportunity to visit.
Absolutely.
Any other reportable items?
I attended on Monday. I attended the ECCFPD meeting, a meeting that I highly recommend anybody sitting out there attend. It was a lengthy meeting, about 2.5 hours. One of the big topics that they had was about the upcoming vote. They're going to be voting for the number of board members coming up this year, November, for an election coming up the following year, next year, 2018, on the even number. So the three issues that they discussed at length were the number of board members that they were going to recommend. They could go 3, 5, 7, 9, or 11, and they are currently at 9. They voted unanimously for 5, and there was reasons given, and that's part of the length of the meeting. The second piece was at what point are they going to send this out for a vote to the public, and it was either February, called an all-mail, M-A-I-L, which means they'll put the ballot out into a mail form that will go out February, And if they went to the standard election, it would be in July, and that would be about half the price, about $125,000 for the general, $225,000 for the all-male. They, again, voted unanimously for the all-male. And there's a lot of reasons behind them, but primarily it's the time frame. If they wait till July, it gives them very little time. Up to the election, February gives them more time to make sure the public is aware. And the last issue they were divided on somewhat, and my mind, it was either whether they have an election by division, some call it wards, or whether they go at large, so a total population 114,000 in Indian County. And they were split, much discussion on that, but the final vote was 6-2 in favor of at large. So that was primarily the meeting. It was good, and I highly recommend that we see more attendance over at that. It concerns all of us. That's all.
I have a question for clarity. So that, if I understand right, that the fire board is now going to become an elected position similar to ours, and it looks like there'd be five opportunities for people to put their name in to see if they can elect it.
That's absolutely, I should have clarified that, so thank you for the clarification. That's correct.
So if there's any members in the audience that would want to run for that board, there's a great opportunity.
That is true. I don't see anyone.
No, nobody's jumping out of the chair.
I don't want to run, but I want to ask a clarification if you don't mind.
No, I want you to run.
No, I think I'll wait till he's done. Bill, would you know if that is true, to put five out to vote, could five residents out of Oakley get the most votes and then Oakley be heavily representative, or is this by one of the five represents a certain area?
That's the difference between the division or ward versus the at-large. The at-large would be five candidates voted on by all parties within, all residents within the East Contra Costa County. A lot of discussion, again, and I won't go through all
of that.
There is one piece, and Chief Helmick should be here next meeting, and I think he will give an update, and if you want to attend that, to ask more questions. When they do divisions, the county would do the divisions, and the divisions are final. There is no adjustment after the division. So if they voted for a division or a ward, they don't know how it will be divided, but it would be divided by population. And when you look at the total populations, and I'm rounding here, Brentwood about 50,000, Oakley about 35,000, Discovery Bay about 13,000, 2,000 for Bethel Island, 1,000 for Nyson, 1,000 for Byron. And then Morgan Territory, the remaining maybe 55,000. So how do you divide that so it makes sense? If you divide it by five members, it would be about 22,000, 23,000 per. So you can see all the smaller Discovery Base, not by itself, we'd have to join up with others. So that was the debate, whether there's an advantage to going to it or not. But it's their recommendation. That is not a done deal. That has to go on the board, or for the residents to vote. I hope that answered it.
It did. Thank you. Okay.
Any other reports? I know that a few of us went to the California Special Districts Association meeting. I know I found it very productive. I spent a lot of time at the finance seminars looking at dashboards. Financial dashboards that we could perhaps receive every month that would show us kind of a quick snapshot of the condition of the district is. So I kind of look forward to working with the committee and trying to implement some of that with our finance department. I don't know if anybody else had any other comments they wanted to make.
Well, I'll just say that I thought it was very productive. Also, there's a tremendous amount of educational opportunities. All the programs that I went to, I came back and I just had a brief meeting with the manager and brought my ideas of what I found. He's got some, so well worth the effort and the time.
Just the other comment, what do you think, 900 people?
Just about.
About 900 people throughout California that attended the meeting, so it was a real good opportunity to rub shoulders with some of them and get good ideas.
Okay. I agreed with all those comments.
Copy. Moving forward, General Manager's report.
I have three items, Mr. President. One is we're going to be doing CPR training for all the staff on October 17th. That will include retraining on the defibrillator, et cetera. So if there's any issues at a meeting here, we'll be ready to take care of you. And we're partnering with Veolia on getting that done, so we appreciate that. Next item, actually, I see Brian in the audience. I was going to mention the summer jam. Would you like to say a few words on that and kind of assist me on that report? Could you step to the microphone, please? October 17th.
Good evening, Ward. I'm Chair Bay. Brian Cattell, the Lions Club. The only thing I'd like to say about the Summer Jam was it was probably the biggest concert turnout I've seen in the 10 years I've been out here. It truly was an amazing evening. The residents came out in droves. I saw more blankets, more lawn chairs, more frisbees being thrown around, and I would estimate at any given time it was at least between 1,500 and 2,000 people. It was an amazing time. I mean, Mike was pouring beer with me, and we were nonstop. And in fact, we ran out of alcohol pretty quickly into the evening. And let's do more of them. That's all I can say.
Yeah. Did you have a report on the money, or do you want to say that?
I apologize. So I should mention
we're always concerned about
the money's very important. So just to give perspective, how successful these concerts have been. Summer Jam 1, June 2nd, we raised $6,500. This one we did $9,000. I'm saying that in the evening got cut short a little bit. Had the evening gone all the way, it could have been $10,000, $11,000. So, to me, the town wants it, the community wants it, and the money is there. And that $9,000, half it's going to the community center. So, in total, the Lions will give back over $10,000 to the community center. So, we're happy about that. Hopefully, the money goes to good usage.
Definitely. We appreciate all you do.
Thank you.
Yeah, Brian did a wonderful job, and so I just wanted to share that with you. It was an outstanding event, so we look forward to more. And Monica, of course, was instrumental in getting things done and cooperating with the Lions and Brian in particular. So I just wanted to give kudos to her and our recreation department. Did a fabulous job.
Thank you.
Last issue is Maestro, if you please. An explanation on your tax bill that's coming in the mail. For some, it's already arrived. So yes, we will be zooming in on that. I know it's small right now, but here are two Discovery Bay examples of our current fiscal year 2017-18 property tax bills. The tax bills cover a one-year period from July 1st, 2017 to June 30th, 2018. However, payments for the year can be made in two installments, one in November of 2017 and one in February 2018. The bill on the left represents properties metered before July 1st, and the bill on the right represents meters that are put in after July 1st. The red circle indicates the panel where the Town of Discovery Bay charge is located. Maestro, next slide. The slide zooms in on the circled panels. The Town of Discovery Bay charge is highlighted in yellow. Both comparisons are based on a single family residence with a parcel size of 5,000 to 10,000 square feet. Prices change for different parcel sizes and different uses. Again, the left panel represents a meter installed prior to July 1st. The total charge is $1,110.28. This represents a full year $915.88 wastewater charge and a full year water account charge of $194.40. These customers pay the water account charge at a set amount each year. Monthly water consumption is billed to these customers based on usage. The account fee represents infrastructure and associated costs that would incur regardless of consumption. The right panel represents a meter installed after July 1st. The total charge is $1,289.26. This includes the full year $915.88 wastewater charge. Now, because metered water consumption charges will not start until January of 2018, the customer is being charged one half year or 6 months worth of the account charge for the period January 1st, 2018 through June 30th, 2018. This comes to $97.20, which is half of the $194.40 you see billed to the other side. For the period of July 1, 2017 to December 31, 2017, when we expect the remainder of the meters to be installed, the customer is being billed one half for 6 months worth of unmetered property rate. The unmetered annual or 12-month rate is $552.36, and half of that is $276.18. Maestro, last panel. The last panel represents a side-by-side comparison. For single-family residential properties with a parcel size 5,000 to 10,000 square feet, unmetered properties in 2016 received a Discovery Bay charge of $1,377.48. Everyone was paying the $552.36 for the unmetered charge. On our current bill, customers who received a meter prior to July 1 pay a small account charge of $194.40, but they don't pay an unmetered charge. Those whose meters are after July 1st pay half the annual account charge and half the annual unmetered rate. I passed out an explanation sheet to go along with this slide, and if there are any questions, I'm here to answer. Are any questions?
No questions. I'd just like to make a comment that I think this is very useful for the general public, and I'm sure as the bills are coming, we're going to receive those questions, so we've got it answered already. I'm sure it's on our website, and this form is on.
It's on the agenda.
I appreciate that. Just for clarification purposes, Mike, this was just an example of one size of lot type. So this, it could be either more or less for your particular lot, depending on the predetermined lot size allocation. But that brings up a question for me that I should know the answer to, and I don't. Is sewer also on that same lot size allocation? Or is it all the same no matter what size your lot for sewer?
Sewer is based on, generally, single family or multiple family is one rate. Multiple family condos are a different rate, and vacant property is a different rate.
So it's not quite as many breakdowns, but it's still broken down.
Correct.
Okay.
And have we looked at putting this onto the email blast?
We can certainly do an email blast referencing where this can be found on our website.
That'd be perfect, and a great opportunity to tell anybody that has not signed up for the email blast. It's on our website. And you can sign up for that and get push notification. You don't have to come to the website to get the update. So it's a very useful tool.
Also on their water bill, we had put a message on the water bill itself to please sign up, stay informed, please sign up for our email blast. That's on the water bill as well.
And tell everybody you know.
Any other questions?
That concludes our presentation.
The correspondence, I think, any future agenda items? Nothing. Council, move to closed session.
Thank you. The Town of Discovery Bay Board of Directors will adjourn into closed session per the items listed on the agenda as 0, 1, 2, and 3.